And good morning. We are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we also have David Palmbach from CISA here. Morning, David.
Morning. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, my gosh. It's our pleasure to have you. And as I told you guys earlier, I didn't plan on David running into this buzzsaw this morning on Friday from Friday's incident. We planned this weeks in advance, but it's really timely that you're here.
Yeah, yeah, just another day in IT. And of course, it always happens on a Friday, right? Can't be a Monday.
Why is that? Why do these things happen on a Friday?
Well, maliciously, guys want to do it when we're gone for the weekend. This one was just luck of the draw.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So David's from CISA. Now, what does CISA do again? Describe what you guys, I mean, you guys started in 2018.
Yeah, so fairly new agency within the federal government. Really, our mission boils down at its most simplest form to risk reduction for our critical infrastructure, focusing on cybersecurity, also physical security as well.
Right, so critical infrastructure. So what we saw on Friday was all that went out the window.
Yep.
And so, you know, David's agency is to try to help prepare companies and critical infrastructure organizations to deal with a malicious actor bringing this down. But this was a pleasant little update that brought us down. But you guys want us to think, David's agency's out there, again, started in 2018. It should have started long before that. Y2K was a thing is when it should have started.
Yeah.
To actually have companies think about what they're going to do should they be impacted. We had just had a caller call in. His business was impacted by the CrowdStrike system. And his course, he's got an encrypted PC and he can't fix it. And IT over there is going to wipe and reload, which again, if Dennis and I had a quarter every time we said the word wipe and reload, we both would be driving better cars.
Yeah.
So you guys are out there trying to explain just the scale of what companies need to consider when these things happen, right?
Yeah. And, you know, in a society where everything relies on technology, everyone should be having this conversation. You know,
right.
With your organization, if everything went down, you lost all your technology, then what? You know, how are you going to continue to operate, especially your core functions?
Right.
That's what's really most important. And I think that's the biggest lesson learned, really, from Friday's event is business continuity plan. Did you have a plan in place? You know, we saw organizations that were pretty efficient at continuing to operate, or at least they had a good plan in place. It wasn't the whole house is on fire.
Which industries were those, David?
Fair. You know, but then there was other organizations that didn't have a plan, and it was a lot more painful for them, a lot more painful in the moment. You know, so what it really boils down to in its most simple form is you got to have a plan, and you got to update it, and you got to test it. Everyone got a free test on Friday. And even the people that didn't have CrowdStrike, I hope you're looking at this event, you know, and taking notes. You know, even if it didn't impact you, use this as a good time to approach your leadership and say, hey, we got to have a talk about this.
Well, right. I mean, a lot of these boards are staffed with people who are not IT people. All right. And you look at Snowflake, right? AT&T just had another breach thanks to Snowflake. And you look at the AT&T board and none of them are IT people. All of them relied on somebody reporting that the cybersecurity was good. It's good. Really, buddy? All your data is gone. Right.
Yeah.
So you need ding dongs like me sitting on some of these boards saying, guys, can you look over here? Because you want to reboot, you want to wipe and reload 1,000 systems?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest deficiencies we have in the IT field is soft skills. It's people skills. You know, and not being able to stand in front of a board, give a good presentation, and speak a language that they understand. And what's the language that leadership typically understands? Money.
Money.
Money. Yeah. And it's really hard in cyber to turn impact into money and do that equation. And it takes time and it takes resources, which typically we don't have.
Right. No, that's all true. And the assumptions are also that these leaders in these companies and businesses just don't think IT is just, they take it for granted. The systems are just going to work. You go over and hide in your basements and, you know, do your updates and leave us alone. And, oh, you got to buy a server. Okay, go ahead, I guess. You're right. The communication between IT and leadership is a problem. And it's a problem everywhere. We see it constantly even in our client base. We support over 400 businesses. And I can't get some companies to upgrade 10-year-old servers running, you know, server 2012. I mean, I can't convince them. It's like, okay, when it crashes around your ears, just call me when you need me, I guess. It's one of those things with IT is you pay me now or pay me later. This should be the biggest wake-up call on the planet. Now, it won't be, but it should be. What just happened should scare the you-know-what out of everybody. It really should, and I'm not an alarmist. But that was breathtakingly awful.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, if I had a magic ball to look into, I'd say it's probably going to happen again.
You're right. You probably know more about this than I do because of what you guys deal with.
Yeah, just the way society is. There's more and more technology intertwined with everything, and we're just continuing to push that direction. And you know, yes, we're getting the convenience of things, but there's an offset to that, you know, and that's the risk. So, you know, again, it goes back to that plan. You got to have that plan. It's so important.
So when you start a plan like that, when you speak to businesses and organizations, especially, you know, critical infrastructure, where do you start with the plan? I mean, do you say, hey, you get 1,000 systems and how long would it take you to wipe and reload them all? Does that come up? I mean, that really almost should be the first thing you say.
I would say so. I mean, given what we saw.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it can. There? I mean, I think that the most important thing is identifying what we call your crown jewel, right? What's your most important thing, right? Because even in an incident like this, right, where we're talking for some of these large organizations, thousands of servers down, the whole business is down. The real question is, where do we start, right? What's the first thing we need to get back up? What's the first critical business function we need to return? So the first thing we typically do is something we call the business impact analysis.
Okay.
Where essentially we're looking at impact over time, right? So if you were down for 1 hour, you know, what's your financial impact? What's the impact to all your different services? And then after a day, after a week, and we use that to kind of gauge, you know, what's your biggest pain points? You know, like if this particular part of your organization is down for an hour, is there a public safety threat? Are you going to lose millions? Are you going to lose billions? That's how we identify what your crown jewel is. And then we kind of work backwards from there. That's what we want to focus on recovering and restoring first.
I think Portland, Oregon had a state of emergency over this.
News to me. I don't know. I didn't see it, but believable.
There was a mayor in Portland that just declared a state of emergency. So the other aspect of it is when you're choosing systems that are interconnected, understand how they're interconnected, understand what operating system you're choosing, right? Maybe Windows is not the choice you should make. A homogeneous operating system that everyone seems to run at the same time, to me, seems like the weak link.
Yeah.
Maybe we should use Linux for this and something else for that and Ubuntu for that. Maybe we need to get is Novell around? Can we get them back in business?
I think they were absorbed by SCO and then that was absorbed by somebody else. I don't know. I don't know where that lives anymore.
Yeah. I mean, to do all that critical analysis, the first step really should be is should you make it interconnected? Should it be air gapped? Right? Should you have to have an instant update on everything constantly? You know, these things need to be disconnected a bit. I'm contending.
Yeah, well, I mean, diversification is a huge thing, you know, and especially when we talk about business continuity. You know, that's something we talked about. Of, you know, it'd be nice to have a couple Mac devices laying around. That would have been really convenient yesterday.
Wouldn't it? Yeah.
You know, even on the security side, you know, there's a lot of people that have, you know, the whole suite, you know, the same exact kind of firewall through their whole network.
Right.
We don't recommend that because if there's one zero day or that one security device can't pick it up, you lose. You know, if you have a different kind of firewall at every layer, you're significantly stronger. So diversification is huge for security, also for continuity.
Yeah, because even in our industry, the MSP field, right, we're always being sold by these cybersecurity companies, just use our product for all the things. It's like, you know, the Lord of the Rings, you know, one ring to bind them. guys, this is not what we want. We purposely don't want to use one company to do all the things. However, we add 6 or 7 companies, we have 6 or 7 CrowdStrikes we're waiting for.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a balancing act, you know. Yeah. But you know, particularly when we talk about firewalls, in particular, we definitely want to see some diversification there. But you know, I think across the organization, it's smart to think about these things. And if you sat down and you did a red team or a doomsday exercise, so what? You probably would have been able to say, okay, if there's a problem with Windows, how do we survive? One of your first solutions might have been, do we have a MacBook in the corner?
Right.
You know, that's something you could have brainstormed during that exercise and maybe thought of and maybe purchased one, put it in a closet.
Right. Now, of course, you didn't most people didn't consider the fact that Azure would be impacted. So you have the MacBook, but you still can't get to your virtual server that you get a reboot, according to Microsoft, 15 times. Some guy at Microsoft, if you saw that
12 fix, to 15. Yeah.
Yeah, you saw it.
12 to 15, yeah.
Can you just imagine that the engineer, I'm going to try one more time, guys. 11. Nope, that didn't work out. I tried another time. 12. I mean, are you kidding me?
You know what, though?
Are you not embarrassed by that? I'm embarrassed by that.
It's nice that there was some kind of a non-technical fix, because the alternative to that was try to walk your end user through getting into safe boot and putting in a BitLocker key and deleting a... forget it. The second you said safe boot, the end user is out of the equation. You need someone hands-on keyboard. At least if you can tell them push the power button 15 times and maybe it works. You know what I mean? At least you have something to throw at the wall.
I appreciate your positivity on that, David, but to me, it's like you're kicking the lawnmower.
Sometimes it restarts.
It does. It does. No, it worked for me when I was 12. This is where we're at. So you've got the MacBook, your idea is great, the MacBook's there, but you put your whole company in the Azure cloud, which is impacted by the CrowdStrike. So you've got your perfectly good MacBook surfing out to the internet to nothing because your application's down. So then you're gonna think about, well, okay, so do we have a backup from Azure, right? Oh, and I gotta pay for two instances of the cloud. Now I gotta go to the AWS cloud. I got my Azure cloud, I'm now synchronizing to the AWS cloud. Now I got twice the cost. I got my MacBook sitting there just in case, right? And you're starting to add all this additional cost. And then, of course, the boardroom saying, man, this IT thing's expensive. Mm-hmm. Yep. What have we done to it? I mean, there's something fundamentally wrong with what's going on with IT. It's literally feels to me fundamentally wrong that you have to keep doing all this stuff just to get access till you can make swipe your credit card and buy a coffee. It's, something's wrong, David. Something we're doing in this whole approach to IT is just clearly going off the rails.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things to break down there. Like I said earlier, society's moving more and more towards technology. Yeah. It's convenient. The problem on the backside is it needs to be managed, and in some cases, it's fragile. Business leaders don't necessarily see that. They don't look at that. They're looking at money. They're looking at the profit that's gained from the convenience.
Right.
Right. And again, we run into the problem of IT typically not having the best soft skills and being able to relay and speak that money language. Something like this, what you should be doing is looking at some of these large companies that had downtime, looking at their revenue per day, putting it on a piece of paper and saying, this is what their loss is. It's millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And then you go to your IT with that $1 million figure and say, look, if you want to lose this, don't listen to me. But if you want to avoid this million dollar loss, I need XYZ. And typically it's going to cost much less than that. That's why we love doing that business impact analysis, looking at what those losses could potentially be so you can try to speak that language to them, because they will understand dollars. They understand that well.
They do. And a lot of times you're going in front of them saying, hey, we need to put a product in like CrowdStrike because we want to prevent that downtime, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to go to the folks and say, hey, you got to spend, CrowdStrike's not cheap. That's expensive stuff. Maybe less now. But it's, you're going to go and say, hey, you got to put CrowdStrike in place because we don't want to be attacked by the bad guys. And, we're running Microsoft here, so we got to protect it. And then they say, okay. And now the guy who told the CEO to buy CrowdStrike, I would hate to be that guy.
You might get a little egg on your face there.
You might. Yeah.
But again, it boils down to business continuity plans, because as an organization, if you had a good plan to function when you were down, people's stress levels go way down. It's a lot less likely your leadership's going to look down on you and be mad. They're probably just focused on executing that plan and walking through it.
Look at CDK, right? You guys probably heard of CDK and 15,000 dealerships that couldn't sell cars for like 2 weeks. Even at some aspects of that is still down.
Yeah.
When you do these business continuity plans with folks, I mean, the cloud, ubiquitous, but there's, if you listen to me over the past 25, 30 years, there's a yin and a yang to IT. Yeah, go to the cloud. It's the best thing since sliced bread. Well, the dealerships that had local servers, they weren't down, right? So the problem, though, we're seeing is that the alternatives in software are not for on-prem systems. They're forcing only cloud, right? If you want to use our software, you got to pay us monthly and use our cloud solutions. Is there anything the federal government is doing to fix that? I mean, if you want to have that redundancy or you want to have that ability to get back up and running when the cloud goes down, which it does, that on-prem option is a great way to do it. But if the software company is not quote unquote made to offer an on-prem solution, how do you even mitigate that? You can't use a different car management system because that's too much training and all that kind of stuff. So what are we doing? Again, what are we doing?
It's becoming harder and harder for companies to fight the cloud, for lack of a better term, to not go up to the cloud.
Right.
You know, one of the things I've seen a lot on the ground doing assessments and stuff is a lot of people that went to cloud, they're enjoying all the increased productivity and convenience that came with it. They never retuned a lot of those tools to get them back to the security side. You know, we looked at a lot of things in 365, in Google Workspace. Those apps, those cloud applications shipped for convenience to help your business. They didn't ship with security at the forefront. There's security built in, don't get me wrong, but it ain't at the forefront. Convenience is. A lot of organizations never went and tuned that dial. So that's a big thing we've been doing. We actually have a tool for it named Scuba.
Scuba.
Go in, assess your environment, or look at all those applications, how they're configured, print you out a nice report, says, hey, you know, you might want to consider making some of these changes. So that's a big fight we've been having with the cloud, especially with small, medium organizations. Mm-hmm. A lot of them over the past 3 years just went up, migrated fully up, and even just doing that migration took a lot out of the IT. They didn't have the time or resources to go back and do the security part of it.
No, you're not wrong. So the migration happens, you put your stuff in the cloud. Now you got to consider the Scuba aspect of it, like you said, but there's also third-party MDR technologies out there that are necessary because now you're being phished. Right. So you guys talk about phishing, I'm sure, with, because you guys do all this for free, by the way.
Yeah.
Still, right?
Yep. No cost.
It's a beautiful thing. You got to talk about phishing, and you got your stuff in the cloud, Microsoft 365. Being tricked and having your credentials phished is becoming just not even an art form. It's just literally, like I always ask people on the radio, what's your password? They're literally just asking you that. And then they're going to say, hey, by the way, hit 2FA while you're done. Right.
Yeah, so the 2FA stuff has been killer lately. You know, you go back 5 years, you look at a phishing email, maybe 1 in 100 would see that had the ability to try and bypass 2FA or was talking about it. Now it's like 50%, maybe even more. I mean, I see them all the time, and they're really, really good at getting past MFA. So one of the big things we've been pushing is what we call phishing-resistant multi-factor authentication, right? So
what's that?
There's different ways to do MFA. Some are more secure, some are less secure. Mm-hmm. You know, so for example, push notifications, really insecure. We've seen a lot of people still using that. Push is where you sign in, it just puts a notice on your phone, says, hey, was this you? You either hit yes or no.
Right.
What bad guys do is they just send them to you all Saturday long. You're trying to barbecue, trying to hang out, trying to relax. On the 400th notification, you're pissed off.
You hit it.
Even if you hit it by accident, you hit yes, you just granted them access.
Yeah.
You know, so there's less secure ways like that. There's some more secure ways, you know, number matching, what's baked into the authenticator app.
Yeah.
Great way, better at securing it. So it's the cat and mouse game that we're still playing here, where first it was everyone needs MFA. Then we get MFA and they figure out how to bypass it. Now we need the new kind, you know? So it's the poor IT is stuck in the cycle where they finally get MFA and now it's not good enough. They finally get backups and our ransomware actors are doing something else. It's the cat and mouse game that just continues.
So we're going to bring up a story because this was the only thing we had for Dave as far as a story before Friday happened. This is from our friends over across the pond there over the register. CISA broke into a U.S. federal agency and no one noticed for a full 5 months. The red team, it's a red team exercise like you talked about. So this is a silent shield assessment where the folks at CISA will actually go and look at federal agencies, which is great, you know, and see how open they are to being properly configured. And are you guys doing that at all here in Connecticut? Are you doing anything with our federal agencies that exist in Connecticut? Is that your purview? Like, do you do stuff like that here in Connecticut?
So not me in particular, CISA, yes, though. So CISA, we help the Federal Civilian Executive Branch, the FSEB agency, vast majority of our federal government, and we'll set baselines for them. So things like Scuba we talked about, those are actually baselines that they're mandated to have for their cloud applications. Mm-hmm. We set a lot of those mandates for patching. We'll do threat hunting with them. We'll do red team engagements. Incident response. We do all that for our federal government entities. So we do a lot of work in that space. That particular report, though, is it's a special one. So like once a year, we'll actually come out and typically do a really, really detailed report of what our red team did, you know, down to the step by step. the little pieces of code. This is exactly how we move through the environment. And it's a really unique opportunity from the blue team side to look at how that looks like in an environment. How are the bad guys actually moving around? What are some of the tools and techniques they're using? We don't really see that very often in cyber. People doing the full rundown of a cyber attack. It's very, very rare. So I love when these reports come out.
Now, you talked about earlier how, you know, IT is supposed to speak to the boardroom on the dollars and cents of the realizations to actually fix these systems. Now, I'll be as nice as I can. You go to the federal, you go to the tax side of things, if the government side of things, the people working in those agencies, they don't really care that much cost-wise. They're not that interested. You know, I'll update it when I update it. I'll get to it. I mean, I used to talk about the DMV here in Connecticut where they had that 40-year-old system, and we had the auditors that would come out and say, there's not even a disaster recovery in that 40-year-old system. And then they put a new system in, and the auditor said, oh, by the way, they didn't put a disaster recovery for the new system. So how does CISA, besides obviously embarrassing the head, who, of course, we won't fire anyways, get these people to take more action than I can't get a CEO to take action when it's a dollars and cost thing? Is it going to ever get fixed? I mean.
So we actually issue binding directives. We mandate that they do it. They have to do it.
They do. Yep. Or what happens? Do they get like
I actually don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good question. But I mean, they're
binding schminding? I don't know.
The nice thing about CISA coming in and kind of getting into that picture, though, is centralizing, yeah. Right? Yeah. You know, where before, you know, maybe things were a little bit more bifurcated, having one agency with a focused mission, you know, we're pouring tools into this. We have teams that are helping with things like hunt engagements and right. Red team. That's been a big help.
Yeah, I'm not saying all government workers are lazy, but I mean, you guys are trying, right? You guys are out there trying to protect us from ourselves. And, you know, a binding thing, I'd love to have an audit to see how many binding statements you guys have said have actually been fixed or corrected. But this is a very interesting report. Now, when you talk about how you did it, it makes me a little nervous to actually, if you're actually talking specifically how you did it, to actually train somebody else as to how to do it. Is that something you're worried about or no?
Nah, our bad guys are already doing this. Okay. You know, and even more sophisticated stuff than this. That's why one of the things we looked at was like, hey, there's way more benefit in us putting this out into the public and teaching our blue team about it as opposed to, you know, the alternative.
The alternative for not doing it. Well, we have David Palmbach from CISA. He's our local cybersecurity federal office here in Connecticut, who will help your company for free get an assessment on just how your IT is looking and whether or not you're running CrowdStrike. I'm just kidding. So he'll be happy to get out to your site. I've seen them do it in action, and they take an assessment and they kind of show you where your holes might be and where you should be looking and where you can help your IT get improved. So that's what they're all about, and we're glad they exist. I'm very happy they exist finally. And we need to have more of them. So we're going to be back after this quick break with more of David Palmbach from CISA. We'll be right back. All right, and we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And with us is David Palmbach from our local office here in Connecticut of CISA. And we're talking cybersecurity and what these guys can do to help your company see how vulnerable it is. And so we're talking a little bit off air before we came right back on. What are we worried about out there, David? Who's attacking us?
Yeah, you know, the big thing we're focused on is critical infrastructure. Yeah. Primarily, we look at some of the more critical ones, like water sector has been a big priority for us this year. Yeah. Energy sector, obviously, yeah. Communications, transportation. Those are really the key things we try to spend most of our time on.
Mm-hmm. So who's attacking those infrastructures?
Yeah, everybody. Yeah, even our financial actors are hitting that. I mean, you look at something like Colonial Pipeline, you know, huge, huge impact felt in the U.S. here. Financial actor, not a state actor. You know, but we're probably the most concerned with our state actors, in particular, People's Republic of China. You know, we put out a big product, a lot of information in the spring on them. And really the scary thing from that announcement was FBI, CISA, NSA's assessment was their end game, their motive was pre-positioning for destructive attacks. So they're basically trying to bury into these networks. So if we ever have a conflict with them, they can flip the switch, and for lack of a better term, and launch destructive attacks.
Yikes. And we only thought plugging in too many Teslas would bring down the electric grid. So that's a scary thing. So you guys are working with our infrastructure partners to see if China's sitting there with these moles ready to rock and roll to damage our systems. What have you seen? I mean, you mentioned Typhoon, right?
Yeah. So Volt Typhoon is kind of the big actor we're looking at, you know, and it's hard to find them. They're very, very good at what they do. They're very sophisticated. They use what we call living off the land techniques. Mm-hmm. So essentially, there's no malware. There's no IP addresses we can search for. They're just using native functions and tools built into your computer. So it's really, really hard to detect them and find them. Right. You know, obviously we've had some good success. You know, I think our biggest success was publishing out some of these guides we put out. You know, typically, you know, federal government can be called the black hole. You know, sometimes information goes in there, it gets classified, it never comes out.
Right.
This is a great instance of the government sharing information, and in bulk. I mean, the report we put out was dozens of pages long.
Where do we find that so we can link that?
Yeah, so that'll be on our website. You can even just look up CISA Volt Typhoon. Should be one of the first ones to come up. You know, that's talking about the actor, what they're doing, what their end goal is. That was with FBI and NSA as well. Mm-hmm. And then we actually published a whole separate document called Identifying and Mitigating Living Off the Land Techniques.
Gotcha.
Focused on, again, how are they doing this and how can you possibly find them and root them out?
Yeah, I mean, there was a tool that was recently compromised. It wasn't Screen. Was it Connect? What was that? Remember that one was just recently compromised? Not the one we used, the other one. Not Screen Connect, but the other one was
TeamViewer.
TeamViewer, thank you.
Yeah.
That was another one that we're not even sure what's going to happen with that. They quote unquote were compromised. Nothing was really taken. I mean, what is, you know, that's kind of nerve wracking.
Yeah, anything supply chain is nerve-wracking. I think, you know, we all had the tough lesson learned on SolarWinds.
Yeah,
we felt the pain of that one, you know, and made supply chain a topic of conversation for the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. But obviously, they had a lot of success with that, so they're probably going to try and do it again. You know, if you have good success with something, they're going to keep doing it.
Yeah, they're using our, you know, they're actually using tools like LinkedIn. You get North Koreans that are actually getting jobs through LinkedIn,
mm-hmm.
and these big companies are hiring them.
Right.
To be part of their systems in IT. Yeah. It's like, hey, I'm from North Korea. Can you hire me? Sure, why not? They're literally living off the land, to your point.
I love that you brought up LinkedIn, though. And to jump back to that previous article we talked about with CISA's red team going into that federal government network, you'll see this report after report from what our red team does. One of the first things they do is reconnaissance, and they're mm-hmm. looking for key people in your organization. The best way to do that's LinkedIn,
oh,
right?
My
so
gosh,
they'll go
yes.
out, they'll find, hey, this is, you know, your boss or an executive, or this person is the director of IT, mm-hmm. right? And you know, then they can go from there. You know, they can find out what their email is and target them with spear phishing. Maybe they mm-hmm. reach out on LinkedIn, build some rapport, build a relationship with them.
Yeah.
We've seen malicious actors do that before they actually launch their lure or send the phishing email over. Much higher success rate with clicks when we start talking about more sophisticated ways like that. So LinkedIn's tough. You know, be careful what you put on the internet. Can be used against you.
Yeah, and the other thing with LinkedIn, even in our instance, we've got some guy out of Syria who wants to, or Greece now. He's the same guy. I keep telling LinkedIn he doesn't work here. There's some guy in South Africa who says he's part of a division in South Africa, and you tell LinkedIn that these guys are fake, they eventually remove them and these guys come right back. So again, LinkedIn is owned by who? Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this has got to stop. I mean, we need systems that are at least can verify the people are the there, you know, are the actual folks that work at these companies. But the reconnaissance is amazing. You tell everybody who the bad guy, who you are, who you're supposed to go after. So you act like the CEO talking to the controller. Hey, I need a bunch of payment cards and send them to me right now. People do it.
Absolutely. So our even scams like that rake in millions and millions over the years. Last year for just tech support scams alone reported just to the FBI,
mm-hmm.
They had almost $1 billion in losses in the U.S.
Oh.
Just for those tech support. That's the Geek Squad one in your email inbox.
Yeah.
I mean, so they're raking it in, for lack of a better term. It's working.
We are pretty gullible people. So water systems, I used to be the president of a water board in Southington, and water systems are they're another critical infrastructure, right? So recently water systems are, you know, I think after some of the failures that have occurred, they're putting fences finally around the actual water sources, and they're, you know, making it so that, you know, you can't do things to these water systems remotely. But through SCADA, you do have the ability to kind of mess with the water system if you can get in there. It can't do a whole lot of damage to a water system. There's not enough dosing out there to create a Flint, Michigan thing without doing it on purpose. And that has happened purely because of some ding-dong, and Flint didn't know what he was doing about corrosive pipes. But what do you guys do to – I mean, we had a report a few weeks back about like 75% of the water systems are not properly following the security protocols that are out there and prescribed. You guys are actively trying to help water systems be secure, right?
Yeah, so water systems are one of our priority areas this year. So four things we're focused on. Water's one of them.
Yeah.
And mainly for that reason, I think, you know, one of the tough things we see with water is there's a lot of really small systems. Even when we look in Connecticut, a lot of our water systems are municipally owned. They're just at the town level. They're really small. And when you talk about small organizations, it's harder to defend than a large organization that does a whole state or multiple states.
Right.
You know, so target rich, resource poor is the phrasing we use, right? They're a good target, and they don't have a lot of resources. So definitely been a focus area for us and even our adversaries. You know, over the past year, we saw IRGC, so Iranian Armed Forces, successfully hit water systems in the U.S. We saw pro-Russian hacktivists successfully hit water systems in the U.S. And we haven't seen an impact from a Chinese state actor, but I know they're targeting them.
Right.
You know, so our adversaries are going after them. And in all of these incidents, it's been pretty simple stuff that should have been done. These systems are publicly facing. They're facing out the internet.
Right.
They have default passwords still on these devices.
Right.
No MFA. I mean, it's pretty glaring security issues. These aren't too deep into the weeds. We're not talking NSA level security.
No.
We just need the basics done. That's really what we're focused on.
The whole thing that there was a thing called a default password is just stupid, right? I mean, you look at any PDF out there, any firewall out there, it's the, you know, username is blank and the password is admin or whatever you want to call it. I mean, you just PDF, it's out. Why is that come on, man. What is it with us in IT? Why do we make this stuff so ridiculously easy to get into? And the idea that there is a default password needs to be no more, can't be a thing anymore. It really shouldn't be.
Yeah, so that's another uphill battle we're currently fighting. It's a big initiative we have called Secure by Default, Secure by Design.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big push we've been trying to make for mainly software developers to code things with security in mind, to make these tools with security at the forefront.
Right.
Don't bolt it on later. You know, so Secure by Default is one of those things we hit on that. You know, a lot of the products now, they ship in a relatively insecure fashion, and then they give you a separate guide, a hardening guide, to then go in yourself and do all the steps to try and make it secure.
Right.
Most people don't do that, obviously.
Nope.
Our recommendation, do it the flip side. Ship it secure, give them a guide to water it down if they need to.
Right.
That
so
way
when you ship
security's
the,
at front.
When you ship the firewall, have it ship with all the ports closed. Don't leave it up to a geek to close the ports and then open the ones he wants to, because you know what they're going to do? They leave them all open.
Yep.
I mean, it's a firewall. But it's wide open Swiss cheese. Here you go. Go close them all up there, IT person. No, you ship it closed. But it's just ridiculous what's going on out there. So, I know that CIS is involved in this, is holding Microsoft now finally to the fire as far as having to actually focus on security. The head of Microsoft, what's his name there, Dennis?
Satya Nadella.
Yeah, he's the name guy over here. He has said that they're going to make security a focus point for Microsoft. Are you seeing anything happen? I mean, I'm not. Are you seeing anything happen?
Yeah,
Microsoft?
So even just going back to the holding to the fire, CIS is not a regulatory agency. So everything we do with organizations just built on relationships we have with them. You know, we're not regulating. We can't force them to do anything. That's not the approach we've taken to this point. A lot of it's just based on us saying, hey, you know, there's a big need for this. You know, one of the things they did recently was increase log retention by default for Microsoft. So that was something we were really happy with. You know, we've been screaming about the importance of logs and those getting retained for a longer period. So that was a big win we had with them.
That's a good step. What else is going on out there for you guys? What other areas are you focused on for businesses to pay attention to when it comes to cybersecurity?
Yeah, businesses, even just taking a step back and doing personal security. That's a big one too. You know, like I said, a lot of these scams, we're seeing the losses for scams targeting individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where we're starting to see a lot of these big losses accruing. Again, just from the stuff published by the FBI, and you could look at the report. It's called the IC3 report. They publish it every year. It says all the losses for different types of cyber crime. Fascinating to read. But a lot of that shifted a little bit more towards individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think it one of the things we want to try and keep pushing is security for individuals, and just doing the basics. Something as simple as, like, don't save your password in your browsers. Mm-hmm. Please don't do it. All of our malware out there, the second it gets into your system, the first thing it does, pulls it from your browser. We talked about Snowflake earlier.
Yes.
Same thing. That's how they got the passwords for a lot of those. Right. Mandiant put out a report on that, and that's what they found. A lot of these were passwords stored in browsers, the ones that didn't have MFA on it. So simple stuff like that, and trying to help people out.
The ones that didn't have MFA. I mean, come on. Snowflake was literally the biggest IT issue. Now we've got CrowdStrike being obviously the biggest now. Who's going to be the biggest next? I mean, it's nutty. Don't save your passwords that way. Don't use the same passwords. Make sure your passwords are very long and difficult to get at. You can use a password manager until that password. LastPass, how many times has that thing been hacked? I mean, that's a password manager, right? You know, my password manager, index cards.
Yep.
That's not getting hacked. Yeah, you break into my house and take my passwords, but guess what? I'll change my passwords. you know, it's we've got to keep, I know kids are putting their passwords on a notepad on their phone. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, these kids, they don't understand how vulnerable. I'm hoping CrowdStrike and what happened with CrowdStrike opens the eyes of some of these kids. I don't think it will, but to just how close we are to literally having everything break. I mean, we just watched everything break. And we're so interconnected that the more those systems get impacted the way they did, even if you didn't have CrowdStrike and had, like to David's point, use a Mac, you couldn't get to your Azure server from the Mac because the Azure server is down, right? Because it had CrowdStrike on it. So you guys are such an uphill battle. I mean, there's got to be such a sea change in how IT works before literally everyone's concerned about Skynet, right? And AI bringing us down. No, it's not going to be that. It's going to be some dumb update. It's going to bring us down to the Stone Age. You know, we're all going to be battling each other for water, and toilet paper is going to be our currency.
Right back to COVID.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, everyone was hoarding toilet paper. I mean, that's kind of what CrowdStrike felt like on Friday, what happened on Friday with just all the industries that were impacted. You guys have such an uphill battle to help us. And thank for you that you're there.
It's a society thing, though. You know, we kept saying it earlier, it's convenience, and everyone wanting that convenience. You know, even let's take a step back and go back to water sector. You know, you go 20, maybe 30 years ago, if you walked into a water facility or wastewater facility, it was all engineers who were manually
turning the dials and
valves and operating the systems. Now you walk in, it's one person sitting in front of a computer and everything's automated.
Yep.
And one of the problems we've had with that, yes, it's convenient.
Yeah.
Yes, it's helped them save money.
Mm-hmm.
But when that system goes down, can they actually still operate the things manually?
Right.
And that's one of the problems we've seen is the ability to do things manually, the ability to operate, and this is beyond just wastewater, the ability to do your job without technology. People have lost that skill. That's not a skill they have anymore. And that's what's really scary. That's one of the things CrowdStrike helped highlight is people don't have the ability to run and function without their computer, without their technology. We've lost that ability for a lot of organizations across the country. So downtime procedures are everything. Just having an understanding of like, can you survive a day without technology? Can you survive a week without it? You know, how would you do that?
Oh, well, yeah, and that's great. And I agree with you. But it's almost like nobody cares. You know, it almost feels like like the movie Idiocracy. It's like nobody really cares, you know? And so you talk about, can you survive? I contend they don't care. I mean, we were coming back from vacation, and we ended up going to Maryland, landing in Maryland, and they had happened to have a power outage, just a little power outage. Do you think the airport cared to have battery backups on the signs so that you knew where your stuff was going? No. Right? Do you think the airport cared to have enough people at CPB to actually let us into the country 700 people all in a hallway, and they only had three officers from the federal government to say, "Hey, did you buy any booze? Did you buy any cigars? And what were you there for?" No, they didn't care. Three people to process 700. So I appreciate your point.
Yeah,
but I don't think they care. I mean, literally, you'd think these airports and these systems would have battery backups so that the signage still worked.
Yeah,
and the communication still works.
No, you bring up a great point. You know, as much as I can sit here and say, you know, hey, go make a business continuity plan, most people won't go out and do it.
Right.
So I think, you know, the other key we have to look at is when you get hurt, when you have a mistake that got made and you're suffering,
right,
use the lessons learned. Use that as a time to grow and get better. You know, especially in IT, most of the organizations I work with that are really secure, it's because they had a big incident 2-3 years ago.
Right.
Most of the ones with new tools, they had something bad happen. That's the only reason they got the new tool. You know?
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Even with something like CrowdStrike, like, hey, you know, light bulb go off, you know, this might be your golden time to ask for something if you need it. You know, at least when you do have that painful moment and you got to go through it, come out the other end with some lessons learned and implement that. That's another thing we don't see a lot of organizations doing is just an after action. You know, hey, once we're out of it, the fire's done, everything's complete, let's just sit at the table for 30 minutes. What went good? What went bad? How do we make sure that doesn't happen again? And make a little plan to move forward better. A lot of organizations don't even do that part.
No, they really don't. And the compliance aspect, too, that's out there. The NIST compliance, you guys wrote that way back when, right? A lot of our companies are trying to become NIST compliant. We actually have a tool called our Compliance Manager that helps them become NIST or CMMC, or we have all these frameworks
awesome.
All designed. It's beautiful. I mean, you guys had the device. We actually linked your software or your guides when you first came out way back when. It was a little kludgy, a little clunky, but it was there and it was free. But now there's actually tools out there that allow your companies to use it like a TurboTax. As you guys keep changing the NIST requirements, version, rev, whatever, this tool will update. So there's no more excuses out there. And a lot of these compliance frameworks are going to be required to even get government contracts. So if you're not CMMC or NIST compliant by a certain date, the DoD is not going to even allow the prime to send you the request to shot peen the fan blade.
Yeah, CMMC has been a big one in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Makes up a huge portion of our economy is defense industrial base.
Yes.
We have a lot of manufacturers, a lot of bigger companies in Connecticut that fall under that umbrella. And it's been a pain point. There's been a lot of questions asked. There's been a lot of organizations. Maybe it's the first time they're looking at a detailed framework. Frameworks are important. You know, one of the reasons I love them for smaller organizations is it helps prioritize, you know, take a look and take a step back and look at your organization and say like, hey, where's my gaps? Like, where are my actual holes? And, you know, once you're looking at 50 holes, let's narrow it down. What's the most important one? You know, otherwise you're shooting in the dark, you know, you're making fixes, but it's probably not the most impactful thing. If you don't have an idea of everything that's wrong, all your gaps, all your potential vulnerabilities.
And something as simple as just knowing who to talk to if you think you've been impacted, right? So, were you fished? You know, did you let somebody in the door with you as you swiped in? You know, who do you talk to in your organization to alert them that you think you've had some sort of compromise that you were part of? The organization generally is not going to be mad at you if you tell them, but a lot of organizations don't even have an incident response process so that you know even where to start. I mean, obviously start with your manager, it would make more sense, but so many of these instances get swept on the rug. The person gets impacted. And they're like, I hope nobody gets me. I feel like I got fished, but I'm not going to tell anybody until something happens. I mean, that's really the most important aspect is to alert right away.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so we've been doing a lot of workshops this summer for incident response. And, you know, one of the things we're going through logging and all these different sources on your network where you're collecting data, you're collecting information. And, you know, that's a comfort zone for IT people. Yeah, I have this tool. I have that tool.
Mm-hmm.
One of your best sources for information is people, because that's where most of our cyber attacks start, is with the people. So how are you collecting information from people? Right. And that really is going to boil down to, how comfortable are they coming to you? You know, what's your work environment like? You know, if you are just doing nothing but hammering them, you know, hey, you got to do your training. I'm going to send a notice to your supervisor, or you have more remediation training because you clicked on the phishing email. It puts a bad taste in their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, so I've seen a couple of companies who have actually flipped that script. right? Mm. And they've gone all reward, right? So, you know, I have one guy, you report a good phishing email to him, he'll come over to your desk and hang a medal up. He bought a whole bunch of medals with fishes on them from Amazon. He'll hang a medal up on your desk and say, great job. People nice. Love that. You know, I had another one company where, again, if you were doing your training, he'd put a raffle ticket in a bucket. If you reported a good phishing email, he'd put another raffle ticket in a bucket. End of year in your Christmas time, they drew the raffle. People got gift cards. You know, so now people are excited. They get the phishing email. They're like, ooh, I want a shot at that gift card. I need to make sure I report it. And I like the guy from IT because he personally handed that gift card to me near Christmas. And I love that. You know, so some people have tried to flip that script. And,
nice.
And it's I think it's a cool idea.
It is. It is another way to look at it. And nobody likes IT. So that gives him some reason to
yeah,
like IT.
Exactly, right?
And as of Friday, everyone hates IT.
Well, I can't give away gift cards. But once in a while, we'll get, you know, a customer that will say, you know, this email looks bad. What is it? What should I do? Mm-hmm. And in a lot of cases, it's a training fish.
Yeah.
And I'll say to the person, I'm giving you a gold medal for this because right. you recognized it.
Right.
And then I make sure that they get credit for having recognized it. But I can't, like I said, I can't give out gift cards.
No.
It would be nice if I could. But no, I don't have that power.
Now, you guys also do physical infrastructure. I mentioned the fences around water department yeah. sources, which is a new thing, believe it or not.
Oh.
You guys do physical security. So what do you guys look for there? What should companies be paying attention to? What are you seeing is the most lax in physical security?
Yeah, so I only do our cybersecurity side, but typically when we come out and do an assessment, we do both at the same time.
Oh, okay.
You know, and a lot of what the physical security boils down to is access control, kind of similar to the IT side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're looking at, you know, who has access to what parts of the building, how can people get into the building, you know, what are your sensitive parts of the building? It's very much similar to IT and an IT network, right? Mm-hmm. We're looking for what's the most sensitive areas. We're trying to restrict access to them,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, even things like key cards, like RFID, right? Is it auditable? Can I see who actually went to that room? Or is it an old school turnkey?
Yeah.
You know, and how often are you auditing this, right? Mm-hmm. How often are we checking to see who still has access to this? It's a lot of the same concepts we have on the cyber side that just poured over to the physical security side.
Gotcha. So you guys, this is David Pombach. He works for CISA and for free with no embarrassment. They're not going to be like, wow. Are you kidding me? They're not going to do that. They're going to be like, they're going to go through this assessment with you for free.
Yep.
And then you can see where your weaknesses are. You can hire a professional IT company or maybe fire the one you had because he was there. Was like, wow. he will show you where your problems lie and what you should be considering. Now, some of those solutions are going to be things like MDR, like CrowdStrike.
Yeah.
Right. So, aside from the fact that our industry sucks, and that's what you get with somebody who doesn't test CrowdStrike update, they will show you where you need to work on incident response. You need to make sure you've got two-factor authentication, web and email defense, all the technologies that will help you generally until they don't protect your business from an attack.
Yeah, and hopefully we can even go one step further, you know, so there's some things we can, you know, not only say you should do this, we can actually provide the tool or provide the resource, right?
Because some of it's free, too. You guys have a lot of great free resources.
We have a ton of great tools. You know, we have a tool that, again, does our assessments for cloud applications. We have another tool that's built for centralized log management, so log made easy, does logging for you.
Penetration testing you guys do, too.
Yeah, we will offer pen tests. We do tabletop exercises, so I can give you a template to make an incident response plan. I can come in and help you red team one, walk through an actual incident. So there's lots of tools and services and guides we have that can actually help you fill those holes. So yes, we'll point out the holes. We'll also try to help you fill some of the holes ourselves, again, for no cost.
For free.
That's right.
It comes with our taxes. So along with the potholes, we get David Pombach to fill them for us too. So, I mean, it's great to have you on, David. It's always great to have you on. We'll keep having you on. And sorry you had to come after the whole debacle of Friday.
Yeah, there's always something going on. And I appreciate you guys having me back.
Oh, we'll do it. Keep in touch. If folks want to get a hold of you, how do they do it?
Easiest way, go to our website, CISA.gov, and then under there you can find an email address for each one of our 10 regions across the country.
Mm-hmm.
I'm up in Region 1, which is New England. So just send an email to the CISA Region 1 inbox, and they'll put you in contact with me or some of my colleagues.
How far out are you guys? Are you fairly current? Are you months out to schedule something?
I think for assessments right now, I'm probably 2 months out.
Okay.
So not bad.
Not too bad.
And if something critical comes up, I can always move things around.
Sounds good. Well, we do appreciate you coming out here and chatting with us about all this stuff. And you're young, so we have some hope, I guess, to fix this IT mess. I'm starting to lose confidence. I don't know about you, Dennis.
I'm just staggered by the incompetence.
I know.
And it happened so easily that it's frightening with a capital F.
It really is. And we don't like to make everybody nervous about what's going on, but that CrowdStrike thing should make you nervous.
Friday burnt everyone out. Everyone needs to just enjoy their Sunday and relax or try to.
Monday should come again. All right, guys. So we want to thank you guys for joining us. I want to thank Carolyn for producing, Mike G for posting everything. Everything is over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com. And again, thank you, GoNetSpeed, for making us commercial-free so we could have more in-depth discussions about IT and hopefully help you with something. We'll see you guys next Saturday.
And remember, we want you to be geeks, too.